Radio Influence. The future is now.
He got it! From the white trunks. He heard it!
Beautiful! Oh, God! That's beautiful. He's got it!
And he scores the top! Whoa! And here comes a mitchell, and it's all over! It's nice. All over! First round knockout!
Big
he's out! Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt!
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion! The challenger! Here we go!
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
UFC on Fox 24 will take place on Saturday night at the Sprint Center in Kansas City, Missouri, and will be headlined by a flyweight title matchup as Demetrius Johnson will once again defend the 125-pound title. This time, he is challenged by Wilson Hayes. Also, this fight card is going to see a key matchup in the women's strawweight division as Rose Namajunas takes on Michelle Waterson. Plus, Ronaldo Jacare Souza will have his final fight on his UFC contract as he takes on Robert Whittaker. And we are going to preview this fight card here on this episode of the MMA Report Preview Podcast on Radio Influence. Myself and Daniel Galvan will get into everything that is going to happen at UFC on Fox 24, plus talk about a very busy weekend in MMA, a ton of events going on. Bellator is over in Budapest. LFA's got a show on Access TV. Ryzen is on Sunday morning on Fight TV, so much to get into. And speaking of Fight TV, they are the sponsor of the MMA Report Preview Podcast. Of course, I've been telling you about them for months, which they are the go-to app for MMA fans and practitioners, live pay-per-views, TV tapings, full-length matches, interviews, movies, and documentaries. It's your gateway to everything fighting, MMA, wrestling, boxing, and more, live on your phone or TV. Watch MMA boxing on the screen of your choice using just the Fight app. Download Fight free today by going to Fight, FITE.TV/RadioInfluence/. Once again, that is Fight, FITE.TV/RadioInfluence/. And that link is available on RadioInfluence.com. And Fight will be streaming Ryzen on Sunday morning, 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Also coming up on Fight TV this week, you got ACB 57 on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. That is free, so be sure to check out our friends there over at Fight TV. Daniel, how's it going, man?
It's going good, Jason. I have a 14 five-hour energies by my side, ready to get through this weekend at Mixed Martial Arts. Obviously, you have the crown jewel of the UFC card, but you mentioned the Ryzen card, Bellator, all kinds of stuff. If you are addicted to mixed martial arts, you enjoy good fights. There is a lot of them this week.
Yeah, there is a lot. On Flow Combat on Saturday, at Valor Fights 42. Also, you have CES MMA 43. If you're looking for a preview of that Valor Fights card, be sure to check out the Valor Hour on RadioInfluence.com, hosted by the matchmaker of Valor Fights, Tim Loy, and their color analyst, Casey Oxendine. Also, they were joined by the play-by-play man for Valor Fights, Vince Ferreira, so be sure to check that out. By the way, speaking of Flow Combat, of course, we're not going to get too much into Bellator 177 because, well, by the time you listen to this preview podcast, Bellator 177 might already be complete as it's an afternoon show here in the United States, of course, airing on tape delay on Spike on Friday night. But I have the suggestion for Bellator executives, Daniel, and let me get your thoughts on it. How about they sell the international rights to air this event to a streaming service? I don't know, say Flow Combat.
I love that suggestion.
Maybe that's because, more me as just a person who wants to be able to see these fights live and actually in a good stream.
Yeah. Live sports is why we watch sports and why sports is such a big commodity. It's like one of the last things people need to watch live. So just not consuming it live is troublesome. And I will say this much. I do enjoy watching some Bellator on tape delay just because I can skip the commercials. But you're going to have a large subset of your audience that wants to watch these fights live that are going to figure out the results. And if you can get a little extra change selling that international, the streaming rights, stream that stuff live, I don't see why you don't do that, because I also think if you do that, you aren't going to really hurt your TV audience. I feel like the TV audience largely does not know that this is on tape delay anyway, they probably wouldn't have found the streaming service.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's probably more for the hardcore fans. And hey, maybe it's another revenue stream for Bellator. But by the way, speaking of that Bellator card that's taking place here over in Budapest, going to be headlined by now a non-title fight, Eduardo Dantas against Leandro Higo. Leandro Higo missed weight by 4 pounds. He was fined 20% of his purse. And we were going back and forth earlier this week, and prior to him missing weight, I actually was kind of like, you know what? I think that he might be able to pull the upset off here. But when you miss weight by 4 pounds, kind of tough to pick you there. When it comes to the rest of that card, you got Daniel Vichel, John Scherer, big matchup there at 145 pounds. But not a sexy card.
You mentioned the two fights that people should care about. Everything else, if you're a mixed martial arts fan, leaves a bit more to be desired. John Teixeira, Daniel Weichel is a great fight, with that being said.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, in terms of me on a Friday night sitting at home, am I going to sit there and watch Bellator on tape delay? Or will I, you know, put up the UFC Fight Pass on the television and watch Victory FC 56? I'm going to watch Victory FC 56. Just because, let's be honest about it, we're already going to know the results. And as a sports fan, I just hate watching sports event when you know the results. I'll still watch the fights. I'll probably watch the fights on, you know, Saturday morning. But, I'm a little more interested in that victory card. It's got two title fights on there. Rafion Stouts is a guy that's taking on Rob Emerson, a prospect there out of Rufus Sports. So interested. So, and my understanding is that Victory FC is one of the most popular if organizations on UFC Fight Pass.
That's pretty surprising to me, but Victory FC, I guess, does have a significant fan base. And at the end of the day, if you look at that card, they've done a nice job of putting compelling talent, prospects, and especially guys who you are aware of that have some UFC experience. Leandro Higo is an interesting case here, by the way. I just want to mention him. You texted me earlier in the week that you, like you said, you were really feeling Higo pulling off the upset. And I hadn't really inspected this matchup quite well, but after looking at it, I see what you're saying here. I mean, Leandro, he got 28 years old, has really put together a nice run lately. And this could be a great moment, but missing weight by that much, it makes you wonder what the response is if he comes out there and upsets the champion. I assume you have to obviously do a rematch, right? Or is missing weight by four pounds just
you would have to. I mean, but
yeah,
once again, Bellator 2017 described Bellator the year of the catchweights. They have two catchweights on this main card. I think the number's up to like 21 main card catchweight bouts this year. I mean, that is insane.
Yeah, it's literally April. It's literally April. It's been 4 months. That is absurd. But again, if you want to do the guide here, I would say two fights you got to tune into with the co-main event, the main event. I mean, John Teixeira is the other one who has slowly but surely put together a nice 6-fight win streak, but he's going up against just a high level, you know, fighter in Daniel Weichel. And hopefully these fights happen, and then we can do like an edit where we throw in how we predict the results 100% correctly and act like we're geniuses.
Yeah, it's actually – this will be their – 14th and 15th catchweight matchup. They've had like 29, 35, you know, main card matchups this year, but it's so crazy the amount of catchweights that they have had. I mean, and look, some of the situations are, late notice where, you know, someone takes the fight on 1 week's notice and hey, you know, that fighter's not gonna be able to make weight, but it's interesting to see what happens there with the Bellator bantamweight division. Of course, it was supposed to be Darren Caldwell in this matchup. Caldwell suffers an injury. Where does Michael McDonald kind of put himself in that situation? But, you know, he goes a different opponent than what Dantas has fought recently. And, you know, Dantas has this moniker of, quote unquote, he's calling himself the untouchable. But when you look at his past couple fights, more wrestler base, that is not Leandro Higo. He is out of that Pitbull Brothers team. He's got that aggressive style, so maybe he does a little bit shock the world. But I do expect Daniel Vichel to get a win over John Teixeira, and that'll set up a matchup against him against the winner of Strauss and Pitbull next Friday night, which unfortunately I'm not going to be able to watch that live because I will be calling Battleground MMA live on Fight TV here in Tampa. So, but definitely looking forward to watching that event via DVR. But on Saturday night, it is UFC on Fox 24. And I think, Daniel, there is a case to make that top to bottom, this may be one of the best UFC on Fox cards.
Yeah, dude. I mean, that first and foremost, that main card is just amazing. I'm so excited for that 4-5 main card, man. From the main event, the opportunity to watch DJ. Wilson Hayes kind of revitalizing his, you know, this is the pinnacle for a guy who's been around for a very long time, and he's fighting at his best. The women's strawweight fight between Rose and Watterson. You have some nice prospects on the prelims, but I think the biggest reason, and you also have Aljamain Sterling fighting for his damn life against just a violent prospect in Augusto Mendez on the ground. But I think the big reason why we are in love with this card, Jason, is Jacare Robert Whittaker. When we see that fight not in the main event slot, that's when you know you are due for just a phenomenal card. And that fight, to me, I cannot wait for that fight, because that is one where I flip-flop back and forth. I don't really know what's going to take place. Robert Whittaker is a guy I was thinking I was going to ride, picking him time and again up until he would get his championship shot. But he's standing toe-to-toe with, like, one of the legit dudes at 185. That, to me, is the fight that puts this one over the top.
And I've seen some people go out on a limb and take Robert Whittaker. I don't know if I can quite go on that stretch. I mean, but I did love Robert Whittaker on Thursday when he talked to the media. Said, he goes, well, I'm glad this isn't a jiu-jitsu match, you know, which obviously if this fight hits the ground, we know what's going to happen there. But, you know, there's so many parts of this card that I just love. I think the UFC has done a great job of, they've given you reasons to watch the prelims on Fight Pass. They've given you a reason to watch the prelims on Fox as well, which, by the way, will begin at 6 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday. But I'll tell you, the guy that, when it comes to the prelims, that I am probably the most interested to see how he does, and that is, I think, what most people would consider the best bantamweight prospect in the world, Tom Dukinwah. You know, he is a guy that, in terms of those Fox prelims, I can't wait to see him fight. And can he live up to the hype?
Yeah, and he's fighting a fighter in Patrick Williams at bantamweight that is going to give him a nice test there, right? Like, he's going to probably make it a bit annoying for Tom, and with the wrestling closing distance and whatnot. But Tom is a guy who has been on the radar, like, not just recently. It's been a few years now, and to see him, I mean, today he does not have a Wikipedia profile. I feel like he may have one by Sunday.
He does not, because I have Wikipedia up right now. He is one of five fighters on this card that does not have a Wikipedia page. Could you name the other four?
I have it open too.
I would be cheating.
But
I'm surprised. Okay, so Devin Clark's had two fights in the UFC, doesn't have a Wikipedia page. Augusto Mendez has what, two or three fights in the UFC?
Well, no, and Wikipedia. He has a great track record in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, I mean, Tom Dukinwah and Patrick Williams, to a point, you're not shocked they don't have Wikipedia pages, but, you know, I get probably Augusto Mendez may be the biggest surprise, since, you know, I mean, you look at his loss in the UFC, it's against the current UFC bantamweight champion.
Yeah, it's not too, I mean, the way he also looked against Frankie Saenz, and I can't wait to talk about that fight, because that is just so riveting. But just back to Tom Dukinwah, there is something to be said where you have a fighter debuting in the UFC, taking on a guy in his mid-30s, and in his first UFC fight, if you look at bestfightodds.com at 23 years old, he's a minus 900 favorite.
How do you even place money on him?
I don't know. He's got everything you want, though, right? The ability
I guess the only, like, if you're doing like some like 10 fighter parlay, and you're putting him into it. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that's like the one way you could find value out of it. But it would be a phenomenal upset.
But here's the crazy thing: someone's been putting a lot of money on him, because this line opened at minus 385. So someone on yesterday started putting a ton of money on, because yesterday morning he was just under a 5-1 favorite. Now he's a 9-1 favorite as we're recording this here on Friday morning, which, by the way, we should put the disclaimer out there of we're recording this before the weigh-ins have started. So who do you got?
Who's gonna miss where? Who's going to hold a damn towel?
Well, I would expect Missouri's probably a little more smarter than the New York Commission. I'm gonna tell you who. I'm not saying he's gonna miss weight, but he's got to be on the radar.
Who?
Tim Elliott.
Yeah, I mean,
because you think about the issues he had making weight against Demetrius Johnson. I had heard, you know, some rumblings from sources that that weight cut was extremely bad for him. You know, he talked about before taking this fight that he was going to return to 135. He's got to be on the radar as a guy that you're thinking about someone who might miss weight. Tim Elliott's got to be on the radar.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. That's a guy who's – you look at the issue he had against DJ, and now he's fine in a probably a fight that gives him less motivation. Obviously, he's always motivated. Yeah, making that cut is probably tough. That's a smart pick. I'll go with the dumb one because, look, at the end of the day, if you look at what happened last week, if you went with logic, you wouldn't have been able to predict what would take place. You wouldn't have been able to predict what happened to Pearl Gonzalez, what happened to Daniel Cormier. So I'm going to say Roy Nelson misses weight at heavyweight. That's my pick.
How about Jeremy Stephens?
Jeremy Stephens
missed weight before.
That's actually like a good suggestion. This is a guy from lightweight to featherweight, older, stuff like that. I mean, that has all the warning signs that you would see in said weight cut. Has anyone ever missed a weight cut to a heavyweight?
I'm sure. Nothing off the top of my head I can think of.
In the UFC, man, sure. I would be interested. I feel like the answer is no. Like if you, especially if you cornered off like UFC 100 onwards, but potentially early on. Still, it's almost a guarantee. I mean, it's like clockwork every single week. We record this pre-fight show, and then you just send me a text, and it's like, I know what happened.
I sit here, and I'm like, please, let's just not lose a fight. If someone misses weight, because then, I mean, there's been times where we've done show where the main event or a co-main event changes, and we talked about that fight for like 20 minutes. Those are when you get frustrated.
Yeah.
Hashtag podcasting problems.
100%. Hashtag MMA broadcasting problems. I feel like an NBA beat writer that previews a matchup and player rests.
Yeah, like you feel bad for that reporter that spent like 3 or 4 days doing some preview for a fight, you know, and things about to go live, and then you learn that the fight's not happening. Yeah, you feel bad for those people, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Imagine the long-form feature. Yeah, that is a tough one. That is a tough one. But
I tell you, I respect people who can do those long form pieces on fighters. It's something I know I'm not good at. But you know, there's a lot of good writers who do. You know, Scott Harris of Bleach Reports does a great job. Sean Alshadi of MMA Fighting does a great job with those as well. That is not in my realm of reporting.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, at the end of the day, like. That's just like a whole different toolbox you need to do those kinds of things. Those guys are like the Demetrius Johnsons of MMA writing.
All right. So before we get into the main event here, let's look at the betting odds.
Okay.
Give me, I'm not saying it's your pick. Give me the best underdog who has a best shot to win.
Best underdog that has a best shot to win.
Ooh, I feel like Michelle Waterson would be the easy pick. I mean, she's a very slight underdog.
You can't say that one. That's stupid. He's plus 105, Jason. Get bolder. I got one. This is bold. Augusto Mendes. He's plus 250. Obviously, Aljamain Sterling is a better wrestler, but I feel a lot better about Sterling. I mean, Mendes' jiu-jitsu and what he showcased on the feet against signs, I kind of like the picking away of power. I think Augusto Mendes is a real-life dog at plus 350.
I mean, I think, look, you have to look at Robert Whittaker, because if he can keep the fight on the feet, you know, maybe he knocks out Jacare. I'm a little surprised about Roy Nelson being an underdog.
That's another one I looked at.
You know, because I think when you look at Roy, and when I think about breaking down this fight, I think about his matchup against Stefan Struve multiple years ago. And kind of how they were late there, and the fact that Roy's going to have to be able to close that distance. You know, Bobby Green at plus 300, I think that's another interesting one. I think that's going to be a very close fight that I'm going to tell you. I'm my winner on picking that fight. I'm going to pick him to win by split decision. I think he's definitely someone to look at. And I would say Lewis Smolka as a 2-1 underdog is another one to look at.
Yeah, the two that jump out to me was the Mendes, although I may still pick Sterling, and then Bobby Green, you mentioned it, plus 300. I like that a whole lot. If it's close, and you told me between Bobby Green and Rashid Magomedov, which of these two fighters was able to outpoint the other because they had a high volume of strikes, the answer to me every day of the week would be Bobby Green. I think that gives him an advantage in a three-round fight. With that being said, he has not won since 2014 against Josh Thompson. So it's been a while. Some of his pre-fight interviews are alarming. So
he
needs always
money, apparently.
Yeah, and to me, when you see the pre-fight interviews, and it does appear that the fighter may be losing it, that's a big concern, obviously, for picking. I mean, it's a rough one, and it's hard to diagnose stuff like that or whatever, but when you just see a guy who is just clearly different than he was 3 or 4 years ago, Jason, as a sociopath who's predicting fights, that's something you look at and you're just like, oh, that's not a good sign. So hopefully that's just his personality. He's just out there and whatnot. But it does appear Bobby Green's a bit different than he was, 3 or 4 years ago. But maybe I don't even know who Bobby is. With that being said, he's a live dog there at +300. That's a guy who I may even just pick straight up.
Yeah, but let's talk about the main event. Demetrius Johnson defending the flyweight title against Wilson Heiss. Do you give Wilson any chance?
No, but he's really good. He's really, really good, obviously. When you look at the Demetrius Johnson-Tim Elliott fight, a lot of the grappling exchanges on the ground, you could imagine Wilson in those situations faring a whole lot better. This dude is just a phenomenal grappler. With that being said, there's a reason why he's at +650 and why DJ's at -1000s, because DJ's kind of quickly established himself as probably the most talented fighter in the world and the ability to tie the record, I believe, for title defenses. I mean, that's why Demetrius Johnson is the favorite here, obviously. And I don't really foresee a situation where Wilson's able to get his hand raised. Obviously, anything can happen in the sport. Complacency is always the biggest enemy for a dominant champion. What do you think?
I think literally unless Demetrius Johnson has some undisclosed injury that has not allowed him to train, and he has absolutely the worst night of his career, and Wilson Heiss has an A-plus night of his career, I think that's the only chance you give Wilson Heiss. But I was thinking about this when I was listening to Demetrius Johnson when he talked to the media on Thursday. First off, who is the most underappreciated champion right now in the UFC, Demetrius Johnson or Daniel Cormier?
Man, Daniel Cormier is just so underappreciated on every level, but the problem is he lets you know about it too much. So I would say Demetrius Johnson without a doubt, because seriously, if everybody retired today, we just didn't do sport MMA anymore, I wonder how high Demetrius Johnson would rank on the all-time list of pound-for-pound greatest fighters of all time. I don't know. I really don't know. But he's so in the prime of his career, and it still feels like he hasn't reached the pinnacle in terms of attention gathering, that we haven't even begun to take a scope of what he's accomplished. But if he's able to continue to dominate like this, he's certainly up there. But in terms of underappreciated champion, probably no one on the planet can tell you who the heavyweight champion of the UFC is, Stipe Miocic. But to me, it's DJ and Joanna Jędrzejczyk. They're in their own category. Daniel Cormier is underappreciated because he really isn't the best light heavyweight in the world, probably. So I would probably go with Joanna or DJ. I wouldn't even put Cormier in the category.
In terms of also being maybe someone who doesn't get the respect they deserve, how about Matt Hume as one of the best coaches?
Yeah. I mean, that's been a part of the great marriage with him and Demetrius Johnson is Demetrius Johnson, when he fights, and it's really hard to be a backseat driver watching his fights. There isn't really a whole lot of missed opportunity in terms of why didn't you do this? Oh, this is a clear situation. You could take advantage of employing this tactic. It seems like he usually does everything correctly. He always makes the logical decision, and that appears to be the hallmark of just a phenomenal coach in sync with the fighter. And so, yeah, as DJ has rode up to the top, Matt Hume has as well. Matt Hume is a very, very interesting guy. Because it does appear when you look at the way his approach is, this is a guy who kind of zags the way others zig. He appears to be very, very individualistic, I guess you could say, almost. Very, he loves where he's at. And I don't know, I don't know if we would ever have an Ultimate Fighter version of Matt Hume's camp versus another camp. I just feel like he loves what he's doing. And he's really, him and DJ have a hold of something special right now. And it's going to be on national TV again. We're going to be able to see it again. So Matt Hume, completely underappreciated. He's going to come up with an awesome game plan. What do you think that game plan is for DJ when he goes out there against Wilson?
I would be interested if this fight goes to the ground just because of Wilson's jiu-jitsu abilities. I think this just fight plays on the feet. And I think DJ just outpoints him for five rounds. I don't give Wilson much of a shot in this fight. But it would be interesting to me, and I don't think DJ's scared to go to the ground with him. I think it'd be very interesting to see how that would play out. But here's another thought on this. Let's just say somehow Wilson Hayes pulls this off and he becomes a UFC flyweight champion. Where would it rank in the biggest upsets in UFC title fight history? Now, I just happened to find this piece that come out about the, you know, the odds to win in title fight history, and here's ranking them, how this chart has them ranked, and this was courtesy of Fightnomics. Number one, he had TJ Dillashaw over Hinton Burrell. Number two, Frankie Edgar over BJ Penn. Number three, Matt Serra versus George St. Pierre. Number four, Michael Bisping over Luke Rockhold. Number five, Holly Holm versus Ronda Rousey. If Wilson Hayes gets that, does it got to be number one?
No, I would put it number three. And the way my list would go would be Holm, Rousey 2, Serra GSP 1, I think Hayes DJ would be 3. Just because Wilson Hayes has clearly established himself as like a top 4-ish fighter in that division. But I mean, when you're saying there have been so many championship fights and an upset would be top 3, that's saying a whole hell of a lot. That would be earth-shattering. So I would put it at 3. I don't know where you would have it. And also what I would ask you is this much. If Wilson does pull off the upset, would you run that fight back on pay-per-view, or would you run it back on national TV? Do you think the kind of buzz you would get around that kind of upset, surely it would get some ESPN-type stuff. People love upsets. What venue would you kind of run that fight back on?
If you put it on pay-per-view, I don't think it can be a main event. I think you'd put it as a co-main with a, you know, good title fight, maybe, maybe on a Cormier-Jones pay-per-view, maybe. You know, but here's the thing about Wilson Hayes is, what is the most notable win for him at flyweight? When you look at his flyweight run, he is 5-1 at flyweight. The loss came to Jussier Formiga back in 2015. The wins, Joby Sanchez, Scott Jorgensen, Dustin Ortiz, Hector Sandoval, and Sasaki. Now, when you look at where those fighters are currently ranked, Dustin Ortiz is the top ranked. He's number 8.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That does put a little fly in the ointment of like Wilson Hayes being like a top 4 perennial guy, but I still think he's displayed the talent level to put him over your Ray Borgs, your Formigas, your Sergio Pettises. Mm-hmm. But that also probably speaks to the fact that this is a guy who after this fight is going to be in an interesting position, and for all intents and purposes, you know, despite the fact that he's only 32 years old, which is shocking to me because I just looked at that right now, and that's incredibly surprising given his history in Bellator and in Elite XC. But this to me appears to be like, this could be the pinnacle here for him. He could be down there. There's so much on the line here because I think with the loss, he's probably going to get a brutal matchup up next. He would have established himself as a challenger, and you're looking at the top 3-4 guys, and I don't even know if I would pick Wilson against those guys. So you're very right. I mean, the big thing is that it feels like Wilson Hayes really gained a lot of credibility in the flyweight division just for being an injury replacement. I felt like when he became an injury replacement for the championship, that fight didn't make any sense because of what Wilson had done in the division. But after that fight was initially booked and then scrapped against DJ, It felt like that gave him like some kind of credibility despite the fact that he never competed. So I think actually that's probably the reason why we think of Wilson differently in the context of the flyweight division. And obviously the obvious thing of like, well, Demetrius Johnson has simply beat everybody in the world, so your resume has become easier to get in. So you bring up a good point here, Jason, where the most impressive win for Wilson Hayes is against Dustin Ortiz, and it wasn't even a finish.
Yeah, it's I give him a very small chance of pulling off the upset here, but we'll see what happens there in terms of that in the main event. Now, the co-main event of this fight card, key matchup at 115 pounds, Rose Namajunas and Michelle Waterson. And I was thinking about something this week in terms of this fight. You know, I think a lot of fans, they are kind of going, what is the direction of the UFC under WMEIMG? What exactly are they doing? But I think the one thing that you can say that they have done, and particularly over the past couple of months, there has been a definite point to profile the female weight classes. When you think about some of the fights that we have seen, for instance, on Fox, you know, you go back to January, the fact of Shevchenko and Pena headline the Fox car. I think that the WME version of the UFC has really shown that they want to try to put the ladies in these high profile fights. And when I look at this matchup, I think it's clear who they want to win this fight.
Michelle Waterson.
Oh, no question. I mean, I think that because I was thinking about this earlier today where you think about Rose Namajunas. Think about the narrative that was with her prior after the filming of the Ultimate Fighter Season 20 prior to fighting for the inaugural strawweight title. To me, I see a lot of similarities to the way Dana White was talking about her then to the way he's talking about Cynthia Carvillo now.
Yeah, because if there's any fighter on this card to do the surprising retirement, it's probably Rose Namajunas, right? She'd be the one where, oh, I'm just not going to fight anymore, and be like, oh, that kind of makes sense, despite her youth. So it makes sense, obviously. Cynthia is the unproven. You don't know the ceiling. Rose has a couple losses. With that being said, I think she's going to disappoint people that want Waterson to win. Obviously, this is kind of a really close fight. Both have been around for quite a while in terms of you look at what they've done in Invicta prior to this, established themselves among the top of the division. But with Rose, despite the fact that at times it appears that she, you know, she kind of lets the gas pedal off in terms of like she actually has life perspective and she's interested in things outside of the sport, which is a very good thing as a human, but in terms of just a robotic fighter, maybe not the best. So you never know. There is some inconsistency sometimes in fight outings coming off of a loss. With that being said, Jason, you want to talk about potential. Rose's ability at times in her career for fight-to-fight improvement and her athleticism really, really check a lot of boxes in terms of long-term success. And that's why I feel good about picking her to win this fight. But I like the point you mentioned. It does appear that there was a moment in time where there was a full court press to get Rose Namajunas over, and that kind of has faded. And those resources have gone into Waterson, have gone into Cynthia Calvillo, obviously Paige VanZant. They've done a nice job of marketing her. And I think it's a smart decision, by the way. These are just interesting people, highly talented fighters in this divisions, that haven't really been, you know, it's like a new resource that hasn't really been mined at all in comparison to 205, middleweight, lightweight, etc.
Yeah, you know, I'm picking Rose Namajunas as well. I do think this is a close fight. I think Rose Namajunas, in a way, has kind of become a forgotten fighter in this division just because we've not seen her since the end of July last year when she had that close split decision loss to Carolina. So, I think there's no doubt they want that the preferred method is the UFC would love to see Michelle Waterson win. And I think there's no question she would get Joanna Jędrzejczyk as long as Joanna defends her title successfully against Jessica Andrade next month at UFC 211. But I think Rose is going to get the victory. But also, sometimes I kind of feel like Rose, I feel like in a way we know a lot about her, but I think there's some layer of her we don't know because I think she is very guarded when she talks to the media.
Yeah, and again, Rose, like I said, there are some fighters that really stick out to you. This is so in outside of the cage of like, I bet they have deep, deep thoughts. Hashtag deep. I feel like Rose has hashtag deep thoughts. She's very smart and very impressive, by the way. It's crazy that she is only 24 years old, Jason, because I feel like she's been a part of the MMA conversation for such a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, I think the very beginning of her career in terms of the consciousness, and I want to pair that with the fact she's only had 8 fights. But I mean, I think the very beginning was, I believe it was like she's dating Pat Barry or whatever. Or maybe they were married. I don't really know the relationship status, but she kind of came in I think like she's Pat Barry's, girlfriend. And now Pat Barry has become Rose Namajunas' boyfriend. He is the, she is the front and center, man. I mean, she has undoubtedly had just a phenomenal outings in the UFC. She's a fighter who, you look at the way has the UFC really let their foot off the pedal on Amanda Nunes? It feels like they're doing the same, and they may regret it the same way. With that being said, Michelle Waterson, this is a perfect opportunity for her to kind of pick up on, you know, getting a title shot. You're right. A win here, Michelle Waterson will get the next title shot. I feel very, very confident in saying that, barring injury. I don't think she gets it, though.
Yeah, it's an interesting matchup there. Moving on, you have Jacare Souza, Robert Whittaker, and, you know, one of the people I love to read when in terms of breaking down fights is Patrick Wyman of Bleacher Report. He's going out on a limb, and he's picking Robert Whittaker to win.
So, Robert Whittaker has 94% takedown defense. I mean, Jacare has only hit less than 40% of his takedowns, I think. If this fight plays out on the feet 100% of the time, who do you think wins this fight?
Probably Whittaker.
Do you think Jacare is going to be able to take down Whittaker at will?
I think he gets at least one takedown. Now, the question is, can Robert Whittaker survive it? I think that's the mindset here, but I love what Patrick wrote. He said, he goes, this feels like a changing of the guard. Souza's 37, Robert Whittaker's 26. I mean, there's that part. Jacare Souza, this is the last fight on his contract, but you listen to him, it sounds like that he's very close to getting a new deal with the UFC. I get a different sense between what's going on with him and what's going on with Musasi, where I think for Jacare, it's about that UFC title. That is what he wants to cement his legacy as one of the best middleweight fighters of all time. And where Musasi, it's clearly about money. He wants to get the most money he can, which that's probably the case with most fighters. But I think also there's a difference of Musasi's only 33, where Jacare's 37. Jacare's probably only has one contract left in his career, where, you know, Musasi probably has two contracts left in his career. But I can't pull the trigger and take Robert Whittaker. I just think that Jacare ultimately gets his fight to the ground, and once he gets it there, he submits Robert Whittaker.
Yeah, it's a nice way to frame it, changing of the guard. It could potentially happen. A lot of these changing of the guard situations take place when you kind of least expect it. The guy grabbing the throne is usually the dog here, and Whittaker is, obviously, when you look at his resume, it's impressive, and obviously there isn't a fighter that really comes close to Jacare's talent level. I got to go with Jacare Souza here. It's one of those picks you don't feel good about it. You know, you could look stupid, and it's one of those things where it's just blinking right at you that Robert Whittaker has really figured things out. But I want to reiterate, this is just a phenomenal fight. I love this fight so much. It's going to tell you so much about the division. But I think Jacare gets the victory here. He's looked phenomenal against Tim Bosch, against Vitor Belfort of late. And, I mean, this is a guy who, like, was in the cage with Yoel Romero and didn't get finished. So I give him props for that. With that being said, I think Jacare, he is able to at some point either get in the ground or work really well in the clinch, despite the history of Whittaker's defense and not so much success as Souza's offense. I feel like it just makes sense that Jacare is going to win this fight. But, again, we could be sitting here talking about Robert Whittaker clearly has set himself up for a title shot against the middleweight champion, Yoel Romero.
I mean, the middleweight division, it's so cloudy. I mean, even Jacare didn't even want to talk about Michael Bisping and what's going on there. It's just, I mean, I really wonder when Michael Bisping defends the middleweight title next.
Is the GSP fight not happening or what?
There's no date for it at this point.
Yeah.
The UFC wants it to be July 8th. That's when the UFC wants it, but there seems to be that maybe GSP doesn't want it till September, October. I mean, Bisping says that if GSP's not ready for July, that he'll fight Yoel Romero, which I'm sure there's probably people on the business side of Michael Bisping who are telling him, no, Mike, that's a bad decision. You wait for GSP because that's the biggest money fight out there for him. But it's at this point, it's really tough to get excited about the belt or the UFC middleweight title.
Yeah, I mean, but I love the division. There's something complex about it. But again, Yoel Romero has established himself as the best fighter in the division. He may not have the champion. We got some weird championships. I love the jab by John Jones calling Daniel Cormier the 206.2-pound champion.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, it's perfect. Perfect. I mean, that's one of the weirdest. I mean, we need to continue to talk about that, like, just every time, because that's just so stupid. You had the biggest fight in the longest time, and the dude just grabbed the towel and cheated. Like, that's totally what took place. And Daniel Cormier is a phenomenal deflector of like stuff like that, mm-hmm. where he makes it sound silly. But dude, you legit cheated the system. That's just what took place, probably. So, anyways, yeah, that was funny.
I tell you, every time I weigh myself now in my bathroom, I'm tipped. Every time I go, so do I just hold the rack to try to skew the scale and say I weigh less?
Yeah, I feel like everybody at home was like, "Hey, grab the towel. Let's try this out." Yeah. It's it makes sense, dude. I mean, there are times where you step on the scale and you step back on and it's different. So, and that's not just when you do weigh-ins at Texas. So, I don't know. Yeah, that's interesting to me. Speaking of weigh-ins, you mentioned Jeremy Stephens. You think he weighs – you think this is – well, the thing with this fight against Renato Moicano is I really want to pick Jeremy Stephens here. But I feel like this is another sneaky change in the guard type fight. I'm not going to pull the trigger, but like this is a much lower stakes version of it. Where if Renato wins, he just gets all this momentum.
Yeah, I do feel like this is one of those things where we could be talking on Sunday after this fight card going. It's like, man, how did we not see Renato coming out here and with this tremendous performance? I mean, I do feel. I think this matchup could be a little bit like Bobby Green and Rashid Magomedov, where I think it's just going to be a very, very close fight. I can't pull the trigger on taking the upset here. I'm going to pick Jeremy Stephens, but I do kind of get the sense that this is one of those old school UFC matchmaking where the up and comer guy is going to make a name for himself on Saturday night.
Yeah. Yeah, and I will say that he may look good even in losing fashion. This is a guy to keep an eye on moving forward at 27 years old, but I think Jeremy wins. It's good. Man, you look at Jeremy Stephens' last six fights, dude. Holy, what a murderer's row. Swanson, Oliveira, Bermudez, Holloway, Burrell, Edgar. This is a nice step down for him, and I think he does win here, but he certainly – there's some upset potential here, but Jeremy Stephens is my pick as well. I just think in a matchup that will likely be contested on the feet, back and forth striking, Jeremy Stephens throughout his career has showed a bit more to be enthusiastic about.
Yeah, in terms of this preliminary card, there's so many fights and fighters that I'm interested to watch. You know, I mentioned about Tom Dukinwa, guy that, you know, just very interested to see how well he does. I'm really interested in that flyweight matchup between Lewis Smoka and Tim Elliott, Aljamain Sterling and Augusto Mendez, and also Andrew Sanchez, see how he develops. But, you know, in terms of the four fights that are going to be on Fox starting at 6 p.m., the quote-unquote feature prelim, Alexander Volkov and Roy Nelson. This is, I mentioned about earlier, to me this has a little bit of similarities to Roy's fight against Stefan Struve a couple of years ago. And if Volkov wins this matchup, I just think he's just keeping on the outside and he just, you know, picks apart Roy Nelson with his jab. But I see Roy Nelson getting on the inside, gets into a clinch, uses a leg trip down, and he pounds out Volkov on the ground.
Yeah. And it's crazy that Roy Nelson is 57 years old. So, it's weird. I think every time there's a Roy Nelson fight and I'm doing a pick, I always start off like, well, you know, it's like the Cinderella story where the time is up and you're in a pumpkin now and Roy Nelson's going to lose. But the more and more I think about the fight, you look at the resumes of what they've done recently, his win over Bigfoot Silva, the more and more I tuck myself into a Roy Nelson knockout. And I think that's what's going to happen. And at first, when this fight prelim was originally announced, I'm like, well, the fight I'm looking forward to the most is Tim Elliott, Lewis Smoka. But it makes sense for Roy Nelson to be the main feature fighter. Roy Nelson is a sneaky, recognizable name in the UFC. Like a sneaky where you would be surprised, I think, to know how many people can identify Roy Nelson. And it's obviously because of his six-pack. But I think he's going to, you know, he's 40 years old, but I think he's going to win one more time against Volkov. This just appears to be kind of a fight where Volkov may not be able to utilize his significant advantage of reach. And maybe even if he's outpointing Roy Nelson, he's going to get set up for a knockout. And yeah, I like big country.
Yeah, it's, see what happens there. And Roy Nelson, he was asked by MMA Junkie this week about, you know, with all the fighters that have announced retirement, kind of where he's at. And he's like, no, I'm not going anywhere. He goes, I love this. He goes, I just love fighting. And Roy is definitely a guy that, you know, the UFC knows. He brings a unique fan base to the table there. Of course, we've already talked about the Tom Dukinwah. I like him to win by TKO. Bobby Green, Rashid Magomedov. We talked about this fight, you know, throughout this podcast. I think this is a back and forth fight, very close fight. And I'm going to go Rashid Magomedov to win by a very close split decision.
Yeah, we're agreeing a lot here. I like Magomedov.
Which means we're going to be wrong a lot then. Whew,
yeah, I know. We should have disagreed on a couple of these just to save face. But no, I like Rashid. I really feel good about this one. Actually, I don't at all. But Bobby Green, like I said, has upset potential. And I'm assuming we're going to agree on the flyweight fight, right? I think Tim Elliott, despite the fact that Luis Smolka has obviously high-level talent, Tim Elliott impressed me at times in the DJ fight. He did a lot outside the UFC after his initial exit, and I think he's gonna win. Granted, if he misses weight or whatever, that would worry me. But I love the volume, I love the output, and I love how strange this dude is. And I think Tim Elliott's gonna win. Do we agree on all four prelim fights?
As Lee Corso would say, not so fast, my friend. I think Luis Smolka gets to win. He said something interesting to me last week when I interviewed him. He's coming off back-to-back losses, and he flat out told me, he goes, look, I just got to win, which I took as if it means going out there and have a boring fight, he's going to have a boring fight. I like Luis Smolka. I think it's going to be a close three-round decision, and Smolka edges out 29-28.
You may have interviewed Luis Smolka. I asked Tim Elliott about his fight here. He never responded, but I feel like that was like half an interview. So I got my interview counterpart, Tim Elliott, Jason. You know, lock it in. But you know what? If you feel good about it, guys, you believe in Jason. You know, at plus 205 or whatever, plus 200, whatever it'll end up at. And, you know, there's some nice value there. I mean, that's a great flyweight fight, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Elliott, Smolka are two guys who obviously, you know, have a couple losses there. But, I mean, at the end of the day, they're top talents. But, I mean, again, it's also a reminder when you look at where they stack up in the division. And then, you know, you just think back to Elliott's last fight with DJ, how big of a gap there is with Demetrius Johnson and the rest of people on this planet that weigh 125 pounds. I mean, it's just stark. I wonder, here's a question. If you took like the odds of the champion versus the top five contenders today, and then you averaged out which champion would be the biggest favorite against his top five challengers or her top five challengers, I wonder if DJ would be number one. Did that make sense? Was that too complicated?
I mean, here's the thing. Who in the flyweight division would Demetrius Johnson be less than a 4-1 favorite against?
The only guy, and it's not the answer, it would probably be Benavidez, but probably not. Probably not.
I feel like he'd probably be like a 5-1 favorite of Benavidez.
How big of a favorite do you think McGregor would be against? I guess Nurmagomedov wouldn't even be close. It would be super close odds, obviously.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I think Conor would probably be 2-1 or less.
What could skew this, by the way, is if you got Cormier and you got the odds of Cormier versus Mauricio Hua and Cormier versus Volkan, the odds could be so wide that it could skew the average, and that would actually be the answer. That could legit happen. But, I mean, I guess the only other champion you would have to look at would be either Nunez or Ioane Andrzejczyk, but still, I think DJ would probably be the answer.
Have you seen the new UFC light heavyweight rankings?
I'm just looking at them now, and I threw up.
I mean, it is, it's, you know, and I saw RJ Clifford brought this up. You look at the now retired Anthony Johnson. When you look at the guys who are ranked as number one, number two, and three challengers, it took him less than 8 minutes to defeat all those guys.
That's a phenomenal anecdote. That's, dude, the light heavyweight division is in dire straits. I mean, at this point in time, you look at the guy who was like the last ever WWF light heavyweight champion, Sean Waltman, X-Pac, and you're like, maybe he could come out there, compete, and do well. This division has serious issues. I don't know what the answer is. My suggestion is, I don't know how much he weighs, but I think the UFC should sign James Johnson, a basketball player for the Miami Heat. This guy's like, has a background in mixed martial arts. Sign him, have him fight, go undefeated, contend for a championship fight, make that happen. That's my suggestion. Just sign NBA players because outside of the top three or four, man, it gets sure depressing at 205. But there are some reinforcements in Serkinov, in Tyson Pedro, of younger-ish, unblemished 205ers that maybe could have a nice 2017.
Okay, besides Serkinov and Pedro, who gets you excited?
I guess the guy who's at 15, Jared Cannoner, maybe. I don't know. Good answer. Good question. Way to push back on that narrative.
Because, I mean, it's just crazy that in 2017 we're still talking about Shogun as a number four title challenger at light heavyweight.
Well, let me transition something here. We're talking about light heavyweights. I was reading a Bloody Elbow preview of the Fight Pass prelims, and the guy who wrote it, I don't know his name. I'm sorry. He talked about how the Jake Collier fight, Devin Clark bout. We always talk about Chris Swivin moving up to 205, but these are guys at middleweight, lower tier, that are up at 205.
Well, Devin Clark making 185 was just – it was brutal on him. I mean,
I guess he was a 205 guy prior. But even Collier, that guy was a 185 guy. So maybe these guys see the 205 division, and we don't think of this fight too much, but this could have a real implication in this division.
No, it does. I mean, you know, when Devin Clark was signed by the UFC out of looking for a fight, Dana White was the one who was pushing him to fight at 185, just looking at his frame. But he is a 205er. You look at Jake Collier. By the way, did you know there was such a place as Cuba, Missouri?
No, I think there's a Mexico. Is it Mexico, Missouri? I don't know where Ty Lue is, the Cleveland Cavaliers coach, but Cuba, Missouri.
Yeah, Jake Collier is out of Cuba, Missouri. And, of course, Jake has been up and down in his UFC run here. 2-2 has alternated wins and losses in his four fights. And, you know, you look at Devin Clark, you know, he's back at 205, trains out there at Jackson Wink. And, you know, one of the things that when I talked to him that he mentioned to me that I thought was interesting, you know, I asked him a question that was along the lines of, do you see a difference between Jake Collier in the fights he wins as opposed to the fights he loses? And he said, yeah. He goes, I've seen him break in fights, and that's what I'm going to do to him. I'm going to break him. I'm going to make him quit in this fight. I like Devin Clark to win this fight. I think this will go all three rounds. But ultimately, I think that it's going to be a decision that's a clear decision for Devin Clark.
Yep, me too. I think that's the pick there.
Looking at those prelims on Fight Pass, is there a fight that is a coin flip fight in terms of who you're picking?
Yeah, Sterling and Mendez. I get it. Aljamain Sterling clearly established himself as one of the premier bantamweight prospects. But Augusto Mendes, this dude has got it going on. I mean, this is a fighter who's really displayed himself in great fashion. His loss looks awesome now that the guy's the champ, his one loss. You look at his background, how lethal he is on the ground, improvement fight to fight, that's another thing you always look for, and then the stand-up. And you look at Aljamain Sterling, who showcases potential, but at times – you question kind of if he's utilizing his resources properly in terms of just the game plan going on. Maybe there's some regret in terms of output. I think that fight's maybe not a coin flip, Jason. I've had second thoughts. Aljamain Sterling's my pick. But don't be shocked if Mendes pulls off the upset, dude. I know how good Sterling is, and he deserves all the hype. But Augusto Mendes is, even with the loss here, I think this is a guy you got to buy stock in at 135. Both fighters. This fight between Sterling and Augusto Mendes, I think if I'm power ranking fights that I'm most looking forward to, I'd go Jacare Whittaker, a DJ, and the women's fight top three. And then you can make a real case that it's either the Aljamain Sterling fight or the Jeremy Stephens fight. And I'd probably make it for the Sterling Mendes fight. What fight do you think is kind of a coin flip?
I don't think I'm really, there's not one on the prelims that's like a coin flip me. I'm pretty confident in all my picks, which is Ashley Evans-Smith, Zach Cummings, Andrew Sanchez, Devin Clark, and Aljamain Sterling. You know, it was interesting to me when Sterling talked this week, he said that Augusto Mendes reminds him a lot of Rafael Sunsal in terms of how he strikes, the way he tries to get the fight to the ground. And even Sterling mentioned that, you know, he's gone back and he's looked at his fights and trying to figure out exactly why, you know, two judges thought he didn't win that fight against Rafael Sunsal. But I just I think in Sterling, just like Lewis Smoke has talked about this, is, hey, this is about getting the W. I think that Sterling is going to get back to his wrestling. And, you know, what, you know, I think the only concern you have is, does Aljo get reckless on the ground and gets caught in a submission with Mendez on his back?
That could happen, you know, every day of the week and twice on Saturday. Mendez is, if you're analyzing the history of some of these fighters in the grappling arts, Mendez is right up there. And I think Aljamain Sterling is very clearly going to have the ability to control where the fight takes place. But if you're looking at the area where he usually is comfortable playing out, that's right in Mendez's wheelhouse. Again, I'm picking Aljamain Sterling. I think he's a phenomenal talent, but he certainly could be in danger here.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Andrew Sanchez and Anthony Smith, I think Sanchez ultimately just gets the fight to the ground and he submits. Anthony Smith, like Zach Cummings said, knock out Nathan Coy. I mean, Coy's a grinder. But also, I think the striking will be the key there. And I like Ashley Evans-Smith to win a decision over Vieira.
I actually agree with those picks as well. Man, we are in sync on this.
So let's I have DJ, Rose, Jacare, Stevens, Nelson, Dukinois, Magomedov, Smolka, Sterling, Clark, Sanchez, Cummings, Evans-Smith. And are the only ones we disagree on is you've got Elliott. Is that the only one we disagree
that's
on?
That's the only one we disagree on.
Oh, that's not good.
That is awful. Congratulations to Wilson Ice, Michelle Watterson, Robert Whitaker, and Otto McCall. Wow. I don't think we've ever done a previous show where we've agreed on this many fights in a row. But maybe, I mean, you look at best fight odds, and there are a few wide odds here. But there's quite a few close ones, too. Quite a few. I mean, okay, so we look at all the fights you predicted. Which of these fights do you think would make the most sense that you got wrong in hindsight, being 2020?
Co-main?
Mm-hmm. Wait, which one do you consider the co-main event?
Rose and Watterson.
Okay.
Stevens fight.
Mm-hmm.
Green Magomedov. Smolka Elliott.
Okay, so that would be interesting. If you get all those fights wrong, you're gonna be in your own head now. You're gonna be like the answer to these.
No, I feel like one of my followers, I think he put a curse on me last week.
What do you say?
Because right before 210, he's like, "Hey man, what are your picks? You have been on fire lately." I go, "Oh man, that's a kiss of death."
Yeah, the second you think you got the beast tamed, the M and guy will bite you in the ass. I mean, this is such an unpredictable sport. And yeah, I concur with all those picks. Even the Jacare Whitaker fight, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, what would shock you more? Patrick Williams beating Tom Dukinois or Wilson Hayes beating Demetrius Johnson?
Oh, it's got to be Wilson.
Yeah, I don't know. Wilson's established himself.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. You're talking about Demetrius is one of the best pound for pound fighters in the world.
Valid point. DJ is, and enjoy it. And this could be something real fun to watch here because what could be on display is the well-rounded excellence of Demetrius Johnson. If you look back at this fight and you look back at his previous fight, because in his previous fight you could see him dominate a guy from a positional standpoint on the ground with the wrestling. And in this one, you can see him dominate a guy on the feet with his potent striking.
Yeah, so, of course, we're going to be back on Sunday to recap everything that does go down on Saturday night at UFC on Fox 24. But as we wrap up here on this episode of the MMA Report Preview Podcast, do want to talk about some of the MMA that is going on this week. And I think, first off, we got to start off with late Saturday night, early Sunday, depending on where you're at. If you're like myself here on the East Coast, this will be early Sunday morning, 2 a.m. Ryzen, their event taking place there. And, of course, you got Kyle Jiri and Burchak in the main event of the fight card. Also, Koji Horiguchi is on this fight card. Daniel's favorite fight, Satoshi Ishii and Heath Herring's also on this fight card. Watch this event on Fight TV for $14.99. So I'm sure for the hardcore fight fan, they're probably going to stay up and watch this fight card.
Wait, There is a person named Alpha Female. What is this? There's a person. Oh, apparently. Okay, never mind. Her name is Marie Gabber, but apparently she has a wrestling name as Alpha Female.
Correct, yeah.
And she wrestles in TNA. No wonder I hadn't heard about it because I don't even know what channel TNA's on anymore. Wow, that's cool. I'm interested in this card. Yeah, Heath Herring fighting is really, really weird. I bet that fight's going to suck, but hopefully they make out. Kyoji Horiguchi, can't wait to watch him fight. But also, Darren Cruikshank, kind of creepy there. Cool to see him there. But man, this fight card, all about the main event. I believe it's the main event. Kawajiri, yes. Anthony Burchak. I cannot wait for that fight. That's the good stuff. I don't know how I'm going to watch this one live. You know, I love watching cards in the middle of the night, you know, once every 6 months. And I haven't done that in a while, so maybe I will watch it live, watch some Alpha Female action.
And, of course, on Friday, along with the Bellator card, you have Victory FC. That'll be on UFC Fight Pass. That's got two title fights, bantamweight title fight, and the welterweight title fight. You have Rob Emerson defending the bantamweight title against Rafion Stouts, who's a prospect out of Arufa Sports, and also Cassius Kane is going to be defending the welterweight title against Yuri Villafort. Also, some notable fighters you may know on this fight card. You got Dakota Cochran taking on EJ Brooks. That'll be at 170 pounds. Also, Chuka Wills, who's on that fight card, he's fought in Bellator and in the World Series of Fighting. He's on that. Of course, LFA 9. Already 9 events for LFA. I mean, they are putting together a bunch of events there. That'll be on Access TV on Saturday. You have ACB 57, former UFC heavyweight Konstantin Orokin is on that fight card. Of course, you can watch that event live and free on Fight TV on Saturday. Also on Saturday on Flow Combat, you have Valor Fights 42. Also, CES MMA 43 on that CES card. Watch out for Pedro Gonzalez. This is a guy that is on the UFC radar, someone to pay attention to there. Also, Hoosier Fight Club 33. That is on Saturday. They've got three title fights that are part of that fight card. Hoosier Fight Club is a part of Alliance MMA. So a ton of MMA to take in this weekend, Daniel. I mean, literally, you could just like sit on your couch from like, you know, Friday afternoon till like Sunday at like, 5-6 o'clock in the morning and just watch nothing but MMA. But I don't think you're doing that.
I may not do that. But I'll pick and choose the highlights. And, you know, this is a weekend where a lot of the future of the sport continues to grind. There are a lot of fighters that are fighting not on UFC that are going to be a part of the UFC in about a year. And it'll be interesting to see which of those fighters stick out, which of these prospects are able to beat the veterans, which of these veterans are going to be able to hold on to glory once more. The LFA card, you know, there are some fights I'm looking forward to. Really, the one fight, and I hope it's on TV, I'm sure it is, but a Kyle Driscoll's fight, I want to see him fight one more time. He started off his career with a loss, but since then, he's gone out of one. He has a nice little track record. But, yeah, I think we could look back at this weekend 2 years from now, and it'll probably look a lot more impressive than it does today. And looking forward to it, man. I don't know what I'm going to watch. It's like just a never-ending buffet, but I'll figure it out. How about you? Are you going to just sit there all weekend strapped to a couch?
No, I will not sit all week strapped to the couch. You know, I mentioned Friday, I do plan on watching the victory card. You know, and usually Saturdays, I watch ACB while I'm at the gym. I sit there, just pop it up right on my phone while I'm on the treadmill and watch it there. But by the way, your Driscoll, he is a part of the main card. It's going to be the fourth fight on the main card. You have 7 fights a part of that LFA main card.
7 fights?
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. That's a lot of fights, but you know what? It's good DVR.
But the way those LFA cards go, like, if I was going to say 5 of them in the first round, do you think I'm crazy?
No, because a lot of them are set up to advance one fighter.
Yeah.
That's just the moral of the story. I love Access TV. I mean, my favorite thing is in the MMA. I love the New Japan Pro Wrestling that they have on there every Friday. Hope they have one this Friday, today. But I love it. Josh Barnett is really cool to listen to do commentary for wrestling. But yeah, it's a nice mix.
Yeah, so we'll be back on Sunday to recap UFC on Fox 24. Plus, we'll talk about everything else that happened this week in MMA. Of course, you can always follow myself on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. Daniel will follow on Twitter at Daniel Galvan DGG. Of course, you can always listen to this podcast on RadioInfluence.com, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and now on Google Play.
This is an Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear quick fix on Radio Influence.
Now, the NFL draft is coming up April 27th. On one of my next podcasts, I'm definitely going to bring somebody in, maybe from the Pewter Report, maybe JoeBucksFan.com, I don't know, because I'm just going to be as real as I can with the draft, okay? I get asked every year what I think about the draft, and my answer is I don't, because there's so many people out there that claim that they know something about the draft, but, well, they should take this guy, or they should take Dalvin Cook, or they should take, okay, that's great. But if you really consider yourself a guru or somebody who's knowledgeable, if I ask you a question, I'd like to be able, like if you answer it. Like when I, you know, when I'm sitting, I'm talking to the other day, I was talking to Sheldon Quarles about football. Talked to Sheldon Quarles, and I know he knows what the hell he's talking about. Or if I talk to Mark Dominic about football, the old GM, when I'm I know he knows what I'm talking about. Not everybody knows what the hell they're talking about. So I know a lot of these guys out there are watching film, and I'm going to bring somebody in definitely with a little more knowledge than I have in the draft. I know what I like. I know what I know what it looks like, but I don't have the time to sit down and watch everybody's film. So for me to tell you who's great and who ain't great, that's just a tough situation for me.
You can find Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.